It costs a fortune to keep people in prison. One of the many reasons that cash-strapped states and counties during this recession have been looking for ways to let prisoners out early. In Colorado, Oregon, Michigan, California, and possibly a state near you, thousands of prisoners have been given early release and are out on the streets. That has prompted a public backlash. And even worse, the hard truth is that over half of all former prisoners end up back behind bars for new crimes. But there is an experiment now on PBS has been following for 3 years in Illinois that has been working hard to stop the cycle of prison, release, then back to prison. It costs money, but it could save money in the end. Carla Murthy and Abigail Leonard produced our report. There is an urgency to the problem of prisoners who get out, reoffend, and come back in. There's the cost to taxpayers, not just in these lean times, but even during the best of times. And there's the problem of prison overcrowding, where in some parts of the country it's become grotesque. We asked Warden Mike Poulos to show us around the California State Institution for Men in Chino, just outside of Los Angeles.
We're sending a camera crew in here to take a look at the overcrowding conditions. All right, gentlemen? So, guys try to be on good behavior.
This used to be a room where inmates could leave their cells to watch TV or play cards. Well, not anymore.
We have converted it up into a housing unit. We have 43 inmates now housed in here. So, double bunked, and you can see the conditions that they're in.
But it gets worse. Then he takes us to what used to be the gym.
And you can see this whole side right here is triple bunks. How do you guys like the triple bunks? Don't it, though?
To squeeze in all the inmates, they have stacked any open space with bunk beds, and there they sit.
In order to house inmates, this is what we had to do. We had to find space, so we put them in here, crammed them in like sardines.
Decades of tough-on-crime laws helped stuff California's prisons to the breaking point. But last year, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger signed legislation to reduce the state's prison population. And 2 months ago, there was word that 1,500 prisoners had already been released early as part of the program. Victims' rights advocates are among those who didn't like this cost-saving measure one bit. But is there another solution? Some experts say the key to dealing with sky-high prison populations and sky-high prison costs is to address the issue with the fancy name, recidivism. Officially, the percentage of inmates who return to prison within 3 years. And California has the highest recidivism rate in the country.
Right now, 7 out of every 10 inmates that leaves this prison comes back. We need to stop that revolving door. We need to stop them coming back and provide them the tools in order for them to do that.
Too many former prisoners going back to jail is a nationwide problem. In the face of budgetary pressures, Illinois gave early releases to 1,700 prisoners over 3 months, and more than 50 soon were arrested for new crimes. The Illinois governor says the early releases were a, quote, big mistake, and he blamed the Department of Corrections for the problems with the accelerated release program.
I did not approve the acceleration, and I think it was bad judgment to do it.
But how do you stop this expensive and destructive revolving door? The answer may be in learning from a project in that same state. 70 miles outside of Chicago is the Sheridan Correctional Center. It was opened in 2004 with one mission, to prevent inmates that get out of prison from coming back in. When we first visited in 2007, Warden Michael Rothwell gave us the campus tour.
So this is it.
You seem to have a lot of green here.
We have 95 acres inside the fence.
Okay, there is barbed anti-personnel wire. But I have to say the general effect is more collegiate than medium security prison. The warden says that is by design. Changing inmates' behavior begins the day they set foot in a new environment.
Change is not easy. We're not here to fix people. We're here to start them on this process.
To see how the program works, we spent time with two Sheridan inmates as they navigated the difficult road to rehabilitation. And we returned 3 years later to see how it had all turned out. We start with Chris Bulahanas. He spent the last 10 years of his life in and out of prison, a life of crime fueled by drug addiction.
Well, I started doing cocaine when I was about 20, 21. Instead of holding down a job, I just chose to get high all the time. And being that I wasn't working, I needed some way to support my drug habit, and I chose crime.
Over the years, he's been picked up for possession of a stolen motor vehicle, theft, delivery of cocaine. This is his fourth prison sentence. But when he heard about Sheridan, he hoped that this prison term would be his last.
My first thought is, well, I need to go there. That was my first thought. I need to go there. I need some help.
Let's go, gentlemen. Step it down here. Go.
Inmates volunteer to come to Sheridan. No murderers or sex offenders allowed, but the guys here are still a tough bunch. Most have been arrested 9 to 16 times and have served more than one prison sentence. And, like Chris Boulahanis, all Sheridan inmates have a substance abuse problem. Deanne Benos is assistant director of the Illinois Department of Corrections and is one of the policy architects behind Sheridan.
What is the one thing that we can do to reduce crime? Was the question we began with. And everyone said, well, of course, drugs. Drugs are the leading cause, so you're just going to put a bunch of inmates together in a prison and just give them drug treatment and they'll be all better. And what we found is that it's a lot more than about the drug problem.
She says it makes sense to help inmates get clean before they get out. But if you really want to change criminal behavior, it also takes getting an education and getting a job.
We're saying through Sheridan, you're going to go to prison, but it's going to be hard work. And you're going to address that drug addiction, and you're going to learn how to get a job, and you're going to get an education, and you're going to meet your obligation to your family.
And for the inmates at Sheridan, that means a full day's schedule. Boulahanis and his fellow inmates go through 3 hours a day of group therapy, where they deal with substance abuse, family issues counseling, and anger management. Then another 3 more hours for classroom education and lots of job training.
It's not like the way of life I was used to living, get up whenever I want, get high whenever I want. It was very structured and something that I wasn't used to.
I had an inmate one day tell me, he said, Warden, I said, I don't know about this. He said, it's just like work. And I said, that's great. Because by having this kind of structure, they get used to a daily routine that they can then carry on into the community.
Boulahanis has been working with the Illinois Manufacturing Foundation at Sheridan for 13 months, learning a trade other than crime. Other work programs include welding, computer training, gardening. When Boulahanis leaves, he'll be certified as a basic machinist. But what's even more unusual at Sheridan is all the induced soul searching.
Like the bad choices I made in life.
The daily hours of therapy aimed at recognizing patterns of thinking that lead to getting high, lead to breaking the law, and lead back to prison. The end result are meetings like this.
Leaving up out of here without a job and no money, that immediately puts you in a high-risk situation to return to some criminal activity. So how are you going to handle that?
I know criminal activities are what got me here, so I'm just going to have to be patient and avoid them.
How are you going to deal and cope with going to a Home Depot, Menard, or a big store like that, remembering how you used to just burglarize and take things? How are you going to deal with that when the temptation comes?
There is no reason that I should have to take something anymore. I mean, I'm not in my addiction. I'm not using right now. I'm sure, you know, if I walked by an open garage, I'm sure I'd be thinking about, hey, I should take all that but if I react and take that stuff, I might as well put the cuffs on myself.
You ask your grandmama, your auntie, grandma, let me get $20, auntie, let me get $20, and the first thing they say, what you need $20 for? Oh, he must be getting high again, even though you might need it for bus fare and lunch money. And that tend to build up resentment. What's she questioning me for?
I think they earned that right to ask me. And if anybody should have resentments, it's them towards me, not me towards them. I mean, that's, you know, I got a lot to pay them back for.
Once they see that people are here to try and help them change, you know, we're not going to do it for them, then they do very well.
Does anybody ever flunk out of the system?
Sure, sure. I would say probably 25% don't make it. Just because they're not ready.
Well, what do you say to somebody who says, look, prison is for punishment. If you do something wrong, you should go in there and have a really bad time. That will act as a deterrent so that when you get out, you don't do your crimes again.
Well, then that's a thorny debate when you talk about the notion of punishment. Eventually, these guys are going to get out. and they're going to be behind you in the Walmart line or in the grocery store. You know, do you want us to do nothing for them to change the way they've been behaving for the last 20 years or so? Or do you want us to try and make a change so that when they do come out, they're able to contribute to the community rather than take away from it? Most people say, I would rather you do something than do nothing.
Here, Chris Boulahanas has just 30 days left at Sheridan, and he's about to get the chance to prove to himself and to others that he'd really changed. Do these guys make it once they're let out? Does the Sheridan approach really work?
How many of y'all are serious about changing y'all lives right now?
Shron Clemens is about to begin that test. Today is his last day at Sheridan.
It's going to be hard. I've been down here 20 months.
During those 20 months in prison, officials have been so impressed by his rehabilitation, he was asked to give some advice to a group of new inmates.
And congratulate every last one of y'all for making the choice to come down here. That shows that y'all want to change.
He says before coming to Sheridan, he'd never thought anybody would see him as a role model.
I look back on it and I was a hot mess, a dressed up garbage can.
This is Clemens' third prison sentence. He was a heroin addict, he was in a gang, and dealt drugs in his neighborhood back in Chicago.
I've been shot. I'd have been stabbed. I had a gun pointed at my head. I didn't put a gun up to my own head. I don't want that no more. I want to live today.
Good luck, brother.
It's the next morning. Clemens is starting his new life.
You ready to go?
Yeah. Right, man.
Yes, sir.
We come to get you.
The other times he was released from prison, nobody came to pick him up. But this time, it's different.
I'm proud of you. 20 months in, coming out successfully, and now we're embarking on this journey.
Tommy Johnson is taking Clemens back to Chicago. He's a counselor with a group called Treatment Alternatives for Safer Communities, or TASC, and they help all Sheridan inmates make the transition to the real world.
So I'm going to push you a little bit. You understand that?
Uh-huh.
I'm going to have some expectations, but it's going to be all right. We're going to get through it together. I got you back.
Don't miss this part. It's what especially stands out about the Sheridan model. The program does not end at the prison gates, but continues through the entire parole process, which is at least months, but could be years.
We're back in Chicago.
Wow.
Clemens is going to spend at least 90 days here at St. Leonard's. It's a dormitory situation that helps former inmates to transition back into society.
Welcome. You home, man. I mean, you're here. Now you can do the footwork, you know?
Yeah, still got to, you know, marinate.
Takes time.
Manifest the fact that I'm finally out.
This is where my job really starts. At this point now, I have to make sure that he understands the realities. He needs to understand that there's a real possibility that he can go back to jail.
Tommy Johnson says the first 30 days on parole are an extremely vulnerable time. No job yet, no money, the pull of criminal old friends and old patterns beckoning. Johnson's worried that Clemens will want too much too fast.
He's going to be faced with some real choices. He's going to have to make some decisions. And each one of those decisions and choices that he makes is going to have impact on his life.
Johnson will be Clemens' main case manager while he's on parole, but he won't be the only person helping him out.
You got all these people here, all these resources. It's up to you to put them to use.
The following week, Clemens is meeting with folks from a bunch of community organizations. There's the Safer Foundation, who will help get Clemens a job. Gateway Foundation will help him deal with his drug addiction. Even his parole officer is here.
Make sure you stay connected with these community partners so that you can successfully discharge off parole and be a productive member of society. You could do that.
You could do it.
You could do that.
You know, I can. I am doing
it.
All
right.
They're part of his new support network, all part of and paid for by the Sheridan program.
The Sheridan budget is the first budget in state history that includes a community budget.
But how much should we be spending? Sheridan isn't cheap. It costs about $10 to $12 million more per year than a regular prison. But Deanne Benno says it's better to pay more now than later.
Would you rather spend the money to rehabilitate someone, or would you rather face the consequences of their repeat criminal behavior? Sheridan offenders were arrested 9 to 16 times. That's 9 to 16 offenses in their lifetime against the public due to a drug addiction. And if we can curtail that problem, society will be safer, and you can't put a price on that.
You know, guys used to be all in here hanging out.
After 10 days at St. Leonard's, Shron Clemens gets his first weekend pass. He takes us to the west side of Chicago, where he used to deal drugs.
This is my area where I grew up at, hung on the corner here, all down the block, doing my dirt. I got shot at while I was right here. I had to duck behind the car and run in this store here.
This is the first time he's been back here in 3 years. Soon enough, some people recognize him, but not as the drug dealer he used to be.
Yeah. You look good.
Yeah, you look good. I got to shake your hand again, honey.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, so you back, came back and visited the hood, huh?
Yeah, I got to start giving back to the hoods now. I done took from them, now it's time to give back.
Good seeing you.
All right. Y'all have a good day. Yes, ma'am. I sure will. You too, ma'am.
This has happened before. Since he's been out, people have been seeing Clemens in a new way.
Did it surprise you that they called out to you and talked to you?
Very much. Y'all talking to me? It was like, yeah, you. Come here. Sharon, come here.
And before what? They would have been a little scared of you?
Oh, when are you going back home? Meaning prison.
But meaning then, prison.
Right.
So, Sharon, you're out of prison. You're here. There's no lock on that gate. You just move that bolt and you could walk out of here. Any temptation to do that?
No. Not today. And I'm not going back down that negative road, because the next time I might not get up. I might be 6 feet deep.
It's now 2010, and we've just gone back to Chicago to check up on some of the inmates we saw released 3 years earlier. We got a shock when we met up with Shron Clemens case manager Tommy Johnson.
I got the call. There's a warming center, which is a wide open shelter here in Chicago. And he ended up passing away in a warming center. And to this day, when I think of that, that thing really just, it bothers me.
In a warming center where homeless people gather on frigid Chicago nights, Shron Clemens died of complications from a brain tumor. Johnson says that after Shron found out that he had a tumor, the new life he'd created for himself began to crumble. He left his family and went back to the streets.
It was a reality check for me.
For Johnson, who works with hundreds of ex-convicts as they reassimilate into society, this was a very tough one.
I would love to tell you that we have a 100% success rate, but the reality is that's not true.
Keeping all ex-prisoners on the straight and narrow is a lofty goal. Nationally, a full two-thirds of former prisoners are rearrested within 3 years. So the results of the program in Illinois are promising. The state announced that among graduates of the Sheridan program, there was a 40% drop in the number going back to jail. And that has meant major savings for the state, contributing to a $64 million reduction in incarceration costs in the first 4 years of the program. And so Johnson soldiers on, hoping to keep as many of his guys out of prison as he can. And he's not the only one doing this tough work. In fact, the program has grown since we last visited, proving so successful that the St. Louis Corrections Department used it as a model for a program there to treat recovering meth addicts. And as the statistics show, it's a program that can work. Remember Chris Boulahanas? We last saw him the day he was released from prison.
Gonna get to go home today. A little excited about this. It's been a long time coming.
It's now been close to 3 years since Chris left prison, and we went back to see if he'd been able to turn those skills into positive change. Today, Boulahanas is living in Chicago with his mother and getting his life back together.
I looked at all my friends, my family, all their lives keep on going on and on and on. They're growing up, they're getting older, they're buying houses, and I'm in a prison cell. And I'm there for years and years and years. And for what?
He not only had a renewed sense of purpose, but also the support of the Treatment Alternatives Program, or TASC.
I had a check-in with them. In the beginning, it was, I think it was once a week. And then you would go in, you would see your caseworker, get drug tested.
I saw Chris for the first 3 months, twice a month, for the first 3 months.
Jeanette Harris is Chris's caseworker. She's seen him through the better times and the bad, like when a few months after he got out, he relapsed and ended up in an inpatient program. Chris has gone through several drug relapses, but beyond that, no crime relapses.
I tell my guys all the time, you're not responsible for, you know, your disease, but you are responsible for your recovery. That's what you're responsible for.
Without her and the Treatment Alternatives Program, Chris says he has a pretty good idea of where he'd be now.
I was in prison 4 or 5 times before, and I never had TASC help me, and I was back in prison time and time again.
He seems resolute, but Boulahanas admits it's been hard convincing his teenage son that this time is different.
He doesn't believe me, you know. So used to seeing me go back and forth or stay in there that I don't think he really wanted to give me a chance, you know. This time, I've been out 2 years, so he's starting to give me a little bit more of a chance.
It is a tortuous process, but one thing does bode well. He's working here for a construction company. Armed with a resume and interview training from the Treatment Alternatives people, Chris says he was able to persuade the construction company owner to take a chance on him. With close to 10% national unemployment and an estimated 60% of all ex-convicts unable to find a job within a year of release, Chris is one of the lucky ones.
To get a job with a prison record is, I think it's very hard. It's a load off my mind that I have a job, that I could pick up a paycheck at the end of the week. You know, bills come in, I'm able to pay them now. I'm not struggling as much as I used to.
What he tries to do is keep facing forward.
I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed. I mean, I'm embarrassed that I live like that. I'm embarrassed of what things I did to people.
He never gave up. He just got back up, brushed himself off, and just started all over again. You know, he didn't throw up his hands, say, forget it, take me back. You know, Chris wanted to stay clean.
I like staying home. I like having my own refrigerator. I like being free. I mean, I have family, friends, you know, and that's what's keeping me out.
While some former inmates do all they can to forget their prison experiences, others turn those memories into art. In this web-exclusive video, watch former Sheridan inmate, the late Sharon Clemens, read some of the poetry he wrote while serving his sentence. You can find it at pbs.org/now. Connect to Now online at pbs.org. Get the latest prison statistics from our website and learn more about running prisons for profit. Connect to Now at pbs.org/now. On the next edition of Now, can a Rust Belt town on the brink of collapse reinvent itself and help point the way to a better America?
No matter where you're starting from, civically starting from, there is never a reason not to continue to seek improvement. Because not only the residents deserve it, but you're leaving a lot of positive energy and change on the table if you're not making those kind of efforts.
And that's it for now. From New York, I'm David Brancaccio. We'll see you next week.